Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. We're going to be opening up a public hearing on House Bill 5035, the budget bill for the Department of Revenue. With us today, we have the Director of the Department of Revenue. And so, Director, we've asked that if you could just give us a 10-minute overview of some of the questions we asked yesterday. And then after that, we'll turn this over to you for you to continue with your presentation.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Buchholz, Director of your Department of Revenue, and we did want to start out by spending 10 minutes talking about some of the unanswered questions that had happened at the end of the hearing last time. We had a little bit of a disconnect, and we think that the reason for the disconnect was we had pulled a couple of charts out of a broader analysis that we had done some time ago. And I think without the context, it was a little bit hard. And so what we've done is we've asked John Hart of our research section, who is the creator of that report, to give you a broader sense for what all of the information that was in that report. And we think that that may help.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
What happens when the members are still, like, totally lost in space? I will listen.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, I'm John Hart, an economist at the Department of Revenue, and I'm here to present basically a very broad overview of a draft report that was done last summer, and hopefully that'll give a better understanding of accounts receivable and its makeup and the factors that change it. So we have available on OLIS the report with a cover page that gives a few helpful definitions, because the report was intended for an internal audience, and so it has a lot of insider terms. Hopefully most of the insider terms were caught and defined overnight. So with that, the report is a draft. It is materially correct. You might see some cells on tables that look a little wonky. You might see some syntax that's a little bit garbled. If you have any questions about those things, or if the tone is just a little off, or if you have more questions at all, I think the department's available to help answer questions anytime. The basic building block of accounts receivable are tax liabilities. That's the term of art that we use to refer to, basically, for personal income taxpayers, it's usually one tax year and one taxpayer. That would be a liability. So the return that I filed for 2014 would be one tax liability. If there was an audit of that return, then I would have two tax liabilities for that tax year. But most taxpayers have one liability that they pay in full. The accounts receivable was made up of these liabilities, and if a taxpayer has multiple liabilities, when we roll those up for a taxpayer, we call that an account. So where you see a liability, it's talking about one source of debt for one tax year. When you see an account, it's really talking about a single taxpayer. There are three sources of liability that we know about in our accounts receivable. When we do an audit, we call that source a deficiency. It's abbreviated as DEF in a lot of our tables. If we file on behalf of a taxpayer, we call that a failure to file assessment, which we abbreviate as a FAST, because it's one syllable instead of FTF, which would be three syllables, I guess. Also included in filing enforcement are returns that the taxpayer filed after we said, hey, we noticed you were missing a return. Would you please file? So we call those requests to files, or RTFs. And then everything else is really liability that the taxpayer told us about. So they filed a return and they said, we owe this money. And if they can't pay that money, then it goes into the accounts receivable. So these two pie charts show all of the accounts receivable in our system. This is cumulative. So we get payments still for tax years in the 1970s. This shows all of the accounts in our accounts receivable at the end of 2014 fiscal year.
And so this, it's also worth noting we break out withholding our financial statements. Most of the time when we talk about the personal income tax, the withholding paid by the businesses that employ workers is usually included in personal income tax numbers. Here we break out withholding because it was internal, and the collections processes involved in collecting from those employers are very different than the processes from collecting for individuals.
And before you continue, Senator Whitsitt, did that answer your question from yesterday?
Chair Comp, I'm not sure that it does, in that, again, if we have a total income and corporate tax liability of about $16 billion per biennium, and you don't collect 5% of that, that's about $800 million. And yet that graph would show that the total amount of revenue that has not been collected in within your historical archives is $800 million. I'm having trouble comparing those two.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we collect 3% of the total revenues that we get are from the enforcement activities, and we actually collect most of what's identified. And so what's left is those things that are identified and uncollected, which does happen to be exactly that amount. We have tables farther back in this report that show the changes over a year, to put it in perspective. And I can actually flip to one of those now to help with the idea of scale here.
So you're saying that you do not fail to collect 5% of the tax each year. You have that the 5% is the difficulty area of collecting, and you collect a significant amount of that 5%.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we collect a significant amount of the tax that we know about.
So what percent of the income tax and corporate tax, in aggregate, in each biennium, what percent that you know about do you not collect?
It's kind of a difficult. Let me go to a tax year. Maybe that's a better reference. So, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, our collections are really based on individual tax years, and so with this chart we have personal income tax accounts receivable changes by tax year. So, maybe it makes sense because of the way our enforcement works a couple of years back. For fiscal year 14, a lot of the balance that we started the year with came from tax year 2012. And so tax year 2012, which was probably in the neighborhood of about $6 billion in total receipts, we started fiscal year 14 with an accounts receivable of $48.5 million for tax year 2012. Over the course of the year, we identified another $100 million or so. This change in tax here for tax year 2012 is showing that we identified about another $100 million in the course of fiscal year 14. And at the same time, we received payments of just a little more than what had been identified. And so there is a pretty strong correlation between what's identified and what's collected, with the exception of those failure to file assessments. Those failure to file assessments, I think Oregon may be unique in even including those in the accounts receivable, because we make an estimate of what the taxpayer owes, and when the taxpayer files, that estimate is revised to what that taxpayer has filed. So if we send a bill to that person saying, you didn't file, so we think you owe $300, and they file a return and they say, well, I really only owe $200 because of my deductions, and I get an earned income credit of $250, on those failure to file assessments, we actually can end up paying the taxpayer to file, because we're bringing them into compliance.
Okay, so committee, I have a little bit of an issue here. I've got a clock I have to manage, and I've got a long agenda, and today is our last day. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is give us two or three key points you want us to take away today. We have this presentation. I would ask committee members to feel free to go through this and to direct our comments directly to the director. We can feed them through. So hit us with two or three of the key points we need to remember. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I totally respect and honor your role that you need to do, but I rely on people that have been on this committee and my colleague here to my left to ask questions I would never think of. Thanks. And so that's the only weakness in this process, but I understand where you're at.
So committee members, I would ask you, as you go through this and you have questions, to get them to our LFO staff, to John, who can disseminate them out and we can get answers back through. Here's my dilemma. I've got to keep us on target because I've got the big dogs wanting me to stay on schedule. So I'm going to ask you to give us two or three key points, and then we're moving on.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I recall from yesterday there was a question about the aging of accounts receivable. So I will show two key tables and graphs that reflect the age. This table talks about accounts receivable by setup year. Setup year you can think of as year of billing. And so a setup year at the end of 2014 indicates that this balance, the $194 million, is less than a year old. And if we step back a year, we have the balance that's from 1 to 2 years old, etc. So this table gives the aging of the accounts receivable at the end of fiscal year 2013, at the end of fiscal year 2014, and how each of those years changed during the fiscal year.
Okay.
And we have, for each of our programs, we also have many graphs that show a monthly history of accounts receivable. And that monthly history, we start with a graph that shows the total in millions to give the scale. And then we do graphs that show the percent of the total. And so we have, for instance, here with the PIT AR, we can see how much has been in active collections, how much has been in the collection agency program, et cetera, over time. And we can see in terms of aging, how much, it's the little part at the bottom, how much is up to 3 months old, 3 to 12 months old, 1 to 3 years old, and then 3 to 5 years and over 5 years old.
All right.
Over time as a percent.
Appreciate this. So John just reminded me, we're going to have an opportunity in phase two of the presentation process to dig deeper into this. So I would encourage all of us to make sure we go through this information, we read it, we digest it. If we have questions, I would really hope that we would send them through John, who will make sure that we all have an opportunity to see those questions as we get our answers. Director, is that all right?
That's terrific.
All right.
This report's on OLIS now?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. And so, I please, colleagues, I don't want to be perceived as squelching this conversation because I know it's important, but we're going to continue it in round two. And John, is that all right if we put some emphasis on this in round two?
Perfect. Mr. Chair, just one caveat, if I may.
You bet.
And that's that this document was prepared for our program managers, and so there's a lot of arcane information in here and things that they will understand that you may not, because it wasn't intended for an outside audience. It was intended for them to use it to develop their program strategies. So if you find something that doesn't make sense to you, send that question my way, and I'll help you prior to phase two.
Yeah, and so we had asked the committee members, let's not speculate to the negative. Let's ask and get clarification. All right, thank you, sir. Director, I'm gonna kind of crack the whip here and get us through today.
Let's do property tax.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Kinzel. I'm the Property Tax Division Administrator at the Department of Revenue. In the interest of time, I'm going to be moving through my presentation fairly quickly. Please don't hesitate to stop me if you want to drill into some issues. I'm prepared to answer any questions, but there's a lot of material here. We're completely changing gears. Property Tax Division often flies a little under the radar. This session's a little bit different, and for this committee, I think there's some issues that'll be of interest to you as well. So I'm going to give an overview to start. I'm going to set the stage a bit and talk about the system, property tax system as a whole, and then I'm going to be talking specifically about the role of the Department of Revenue and some issues and challenges we have that we need for you to help us work through. So the property tax system is made up of the 36 counties and the Department of Revenue. The role of 36 counties is primarily to do the on-the-ground administration within each one of the counties. Department of Revenue is responsible for industrial and utility evaluation. Direct support to counties, we provide specific support in a number of areas I'll be talking about a little later to the counties and districts and taxpayers. We provide assistance. This is where the counties are ultimately responsible for some of the work, but we help them work through some issues. And then finally, and this may be the most critical role, we provide oversight for the system as a whole. So while the 36 counties do the majority of the day-to-day administration, there's a requirement for the system to be equitable and uniform across the state. And in order to ensure that, the legislature empowered the Department of Revenue to provide that oversight responsibility. Just to kind of put it in context, the 36 counties, there are about 835 FTE in the counties, and their overall assessment and taxation budget's around $100 million. Department of Revenue currently has 97 FTE, and our budget's about $12 million general fund. Total funds about $21 million. I'm going to step back just for a second because I have notes that I forgot to bring up.
And so, colleagues, as we move forward, we are back on schedule, so feel free to ask your questions as it relates to the property tax.
Now you let me talk.
Okay, to continue, so that administration, what it results in is property taxes collected of about $1.3 billion for the 13-15 biennium. The majority of that, again, is collected by the counties. The portion that the Department of Revenue ultimately is responsible for is about $1 billion. And again, that comes from the work we do on behalf of the counties, valuing industrial and centrally assessed properties. That $11.3 billion funds a variety of services, frankly, virtually the same services that the general fund provides for at the state level. These funds provide for at the local level. Schools, as you can see up there, being the largest single source of revenue expenditures. So that's the broad context. That's the property tax system and our role in it. So the challenges we're currently facing. Property Tax Division, and I'll be walking through each one of the sections in just a bit, but the Property Tax Division as a whole is challenged due to a significant decrease in staffing over the last 12 or so years. In the 2001-2003 biennium, we had just under 150 FTE in the Property Tax Division. Today we have 97 FTE. So that's 50 positions lost over the last 12 or so years. 11 of those positions were simply transferred to our information technology section. So we, as a department, centralized our IT and moved those positions out. So they moved from our budget into another budget. So they're still in the department. The rest of the positions have been eliminated. So right around 40 positions. This has forced us to significantly restructure our operations, obviously. We lose almost a third of our staff. We have to do things different. We previously were three sections. We have consolidated to two sections. We have eliminated one principal executive manager E position and two D positions. The restructuring has refocused us on what we have determined to be the highest priority work. We've worked with our county partners to identify those things that they view as highest priority and we look at statutes and rules to help us identify the remaining high priority work. And we've allocated resources to those.
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
Forgive me for having to jump out. I don't know if you said why you have had this decrease. And are you trying to meet the 1 to 11? Is it attrition? Is it you're trying to stay in budget? What's motivating this, particularly if you're on the edge of being able to discharge your core functions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, it's a whole variety of things that resulted in these decreases. Over this period of time, we've had budget pressures statewide and been asked to reduce budgets through these biennium. And so in some cases, it is budget reduction exercises. The department's leadership looks at the department as a whole and makes decisions about those positions that are highest priority to retain and those that we feel like we can best manage with fewer positions. In other cases, we have fewer direct support needs in our cadastral, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. In our cadastral program, we are retooling what we're providing to the counties and don't require as many resources for that. So it's a variety of things. The 1 to 11, we did give up some management positions, but that was more due to the fact that we had decreased so many positions, we thought we would do better managing in a different structure. So we did, I think, eliminate a couple of management positions through that exercise.
Okay, thanks.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. So you have two KPMs that appear to be property tax, the county appraisal program equity and uniformity, and the industrial appraisal value uniformity. Actually, the KPM 14, you're improving. You're up at 94% of what the target is, and the industrial appraisal value uniformity is you're on target. So you appear to be doing quite well without those 100 people.
Chair Senator Whitsitt, we have, as I mentioned, we had many discussions about how we would allocate our resources to highlight the highest priority things that we are responsible for. Those were two of the areas we viewed as highest priority. So we have a relatively fewer staff have been removed from those two functions. We do have many other functions that we are viewing as high priority as well. We believe we're, for the most part, meeting targets, but we are at a point where additional reductions will almost assuredly result in an inability to maintain those targets.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've refocused in order to manage with fewer people. The other thing I want to highlight is, frankly, we've got, if there's a harder working bunch of people in state government, I don't know where they are, we have not had significant decrease in the responsibility of the work we get done over that 12-year period, yet we're still able to maintain, I think, pretty close to the level of support to the counties that they view as necessary to get their work done. Added to this challenge, so what I've just told you was that we have 97 FTE. We are holding 8 FTE open, so we're really only operating with 89 FTE. So I'll talk about that a little bit in the next slide. On top of the decreased staffing, we have increasing workload. I'll highlight that a little bit in some additional slides. We're managing with very antiquated technology. And again, I'll highlight that in a slide coming up. And finally, you've probably heard, especially in Southern Oregon, there are funding issues in the counties. Assessment and taxation offices in, especially Southern Oregon counties, are extremely challenged right now. Because we provide oversight to the system, it's up to us to ensure that those counties are continuing to operate effectively. If any one of those counties gets to a point where they have to relinquish some of their function, the department is ultimately responsible for ensuring that happens. That's a challenge that we are preparing for, but if it comes to fruition, it will be very difficult for us to manage with the current staffing.
Senator Johnson.
Have you put in place any prophylactic measures to make sure that they don't just dump it on you? I mean, is there a minimum threshold before you would have to assume that responsibility?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think it was two sessions ago, there was serious concern that a county may ultimately not be able to fulfill their responsibilities, not just in assessment taxation, but some other core functions. And I don't remember the bill that was passed, but it essentially set up a mechanism where a county can declare a fiscal emergency.
I remember the bill well, so if that's the North Star on this, I'm fine. That's good.
Yeah, we were heavily involved in those conversations. It's one of the key areas.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. So the area I'd like to probably spend the most time in is our valuation section. We, as I mentioned, value industrial ancestors, centrally assessed properties on behalf of the counties. Those properties range in value from about $1 million up to our largest account is over $10 billion. So these are the large, complex accounts, those accounts that the counties would have difficulty in many counties of being able to manage. The workload has been increasing, as I mentioned. In our centrally assessed accounts, since 2001, we have approximately 35% more accounts than we had in 2001. And the value of those accounts has gone, and this is a value of the property, this isn't the taxes brought in, but the value has gone from roughly $12 billion to $20 billion. So pretty significant increases over the course of the last 12 or so years.
So in our evaluation of those special assets, those special companies, the large companies, are we doing that work all internally, or are we contracting any of that out?
Mr. Chair, we do the work internally. On occasion, if we, and valuing the account, we do it all internally. When we get to, if we have an issue where we need to work an appeal, we occasionally will bring in outside experts. But for valuing the properties, we do those ourselves.
Do we find ourselves often finding assets that we just don't have expertise in, and we're having to, how do we handle those situations?
Mr. Chair, it's a self-reported system, and so we get information from the companies. Part of what we do is we analyze the new listings coming in each year and determine whether or not there needs to be assets taken on or off the list. In order for us to be able to assure that those lists are as accurate as possible, we do site visits as well. As far as the equipment and machinery that's involved, it's very complex, but we have people that spend significant time ensuring that they are up to speed on what the equipment is, how it's used, how it brings value to the company.
And I guess the question I have on that is the depreciation of that equipment. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily its original value. I think that's easy to determine. It's what's its useful life, mm-hmm. and what's its value over that useful life.
Mr. Chair, I might add that occasionally there'll be a new industry that pops up, and I'm thinking about the wind power industry, uh-huh. where it takes us a couple of years to level set and come up with a methodology that's correct, and you're absolutely spot on that one of the issues that we struggle with the most in that would be the depreciation, because we just don't have the history to be able to determine it.
Interesting. Senator Johnson.
It causes me, when you said a new industry, to think of one other thing. I don't know to what degree, when collectively we start talking about property tax, about assessments of marijuana farms. I mean, theoretically, they could be worth a lot of money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, thankfully, that will be the local county assessor's responsibility, because that's not an industrial.
Oh, no.
Mr. Chair, one thing I might add, when you asked if we got some outside expertise, Director Buchholz reminded me, with the wind farm issue, we worked with some of the counties that have an interest in wind farm valuation, and we brought in an outside expert to validate the methodology we were using, and it was validated.
I mean, to me, that seems very logical. You'd need to do that at times.
Yeah, especially for new industries, it's very difficult for us to ensure we're staying on top of things unless we get some outside validation.
Okay.
So, simply assessed, we've had a significant increase. Industrial valuation, the number of accounts is fairly flat, but the value of those accounts has gone from roughly $16 billion in early 2000s to $25 billion today. So the complexity is significantly increased over the last dozen or so years. I mentioned we have lost about 40 positions. Of the 40 positions, six of those were in our industrial and centrally assessed valuation section. Again, we've made decisions, management decisions, as to where we need to retain staff, and we made the decision based on input from the counties that ensuring that we get the good values on the industrial and centrally assessed properties was critical. So CAFA funding issues, here's where we start getting some challenges. So we've got a workload that's increasing in complexity and in some cases increasing the number of accounts. We've got decreasing staff, and we've got an issue with how we're funded. We have, we're split funded. About half of the staff in the evaluation section are general funded. The other half are funded through the CAFA program, the County Assessment Function Funding Assistance Program. Boy, say that three times fast. And I'll give just a brief little bit of background because I think it's going to be helpful for you as you may have some questions. This program was developed by the legislature in 1989, and it was developed because there was a clear understanding that there was some issues in the counties funding-wise to ensure that the assessment and taxation work would be done adequately. It is funded with a $9 per recording fee and a portion of delinquent interest on property taxes owed. Included in that legislation was a requirement for the department to take on valuing industrial properties between $1 and $5 million. Prior to that, we did $5 million and above, and the counties were responsible for $1 to $5 million. This legislation gave that responsibility to the department, so we do it on behalf of the counties. What was added to our budget was some positions in order to do that, and those positions would be funded out of a portion of the CAFA account. We can retain up to 10% of the CAFA account in order to do this industrial valuation work on behalf of the counties.
Mr. Chair.
He's attending to his dying members. Thank you.
Senator Rinsen.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you state what year that change is made from the $5 million to the $1 million.
From, yeah, it was 1989.
Thank you.
I need to go back to a 101 question. CAFA. Can you centrally assessed?
Oh, County Assessment.
County Assess.
Funding Assistance Program.
One more time.
County Assessment Function Funding Assistance.
Okay,
program.
Thank you.
That was a test, right?
Yeah. Exactly, right.
So the situation we have now is that we've got positions that were allocated as other fund positions to be funded with half a dollars, and we've got some general fund positions. Those positions, as a group, make up about 45 FTE. And they all do a variety of industrial, both the $1 to $5 million and $5 million and above, and centrally assessed work. The people that are other funded don't do some part of the work, and the people that are generally funded don't do the other part. It's a mix, and we do that for business reasons. We really need to do that. So the issue now is, and you can see it on the chart, over time, since 2001, the red line represents what the cost is for those 23 positions that are funded with CAFA. They're other funded, relying on CAFA revenue.
Mm-hmm.
The blue line represents CAFA funding. That's that 10% that's available to us. And so you can see at the beginning of the graph, we're looking pretty good. We have more money available than needed, right? But around 2006-07, those lines cross. And now in 2014-15, that gap represents about $1.8 million.
Mm.
And that's $1.8 million we don't have. But we have to end the biennium in the black. And so, in order to do
so
that.
So let me ask a question here. And I'm going to ask this of the director. Have you brought this issue to the legislature in the past? Or is this our first time hearing about this gap?
Mr. Chair, this is the first time hearing about the gap. We've managed it internally for a number of years, but it's just getting to the point where we're not able to manage it internally.
Got it. Okay. And actually, the more I think about this, I remember you raising this issue with me. Okay. Senator Johnson.
I guess it raises an interesting question, and I would ask this sort of rhetorically of everybody out there in agency land. How long do we let these problems go on with putting Band-Aids on slit throats, and then all of a sudden it's a cliff, and the dollar amount is bigger, the threat is more present? It's the same with fees. We pride ourselves in not raising fees for 20 years, and then you got to raise them 300%. And obviously, that's an exaggeration. But this is the first time that you're saying we have a very serious problem. I'd like to hear your articulation of what the potential fix is, particularly with Mr. Riddell sitting in the front row, and if he falls down and has a heart attack, we'll know maybe you haven't quite hit the mark.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'll let Mark touch on the fix because he's addressing that part. But just to the first part of your comment, I agree with that. But out in agency land, sometimes what we have to do is balance bringing you something too soon when we may be able to correct it and bringing it to you when it's an actual issue. If you look at the blue line there and you see how high the CAFA dollars were, that was caused by a couple of different things. One was the housing bubble was still in effect, and so people were turning over lots of properties, and the other was that interest rates were first starting to come down there, and so that caused a lot of refinancing in the industry. And so the dollars were looking good, and we didn't know for sure that wasn't going to come back up and cover our expenses again. And so we didn't want to bring it to you too prematurely, because then we'd wind up having excess dollars that you couldn't use on something else. And so it's a balancing act.
I understand that. I appreciate that. But I would respond, maybe in a certain period of time, you're not asking for a specific fix, but you're at least alerting to the legislature to the fact that there's a problem.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, fair enough.
So what fixes this now? Have you postulated some response? Are we just betting on the come that things are going to get better?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, we have a policy option package that you'll be reviewing.
Oh,
you haven't already.
You just said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that policy option package is seeking $1.8 million in general fund appropriation to cover this gap. We made that decision primarily because in looking at the mix of positions that we have, those six positions we eliminated, I said we eliminated six positions, those were general fund positions that were eliminated as part of budget reduction exercises when we thought we had more other funds available. And so asking for additional general fund at this point would make up sufficient funds for approximately eight to ten positions. So six of those have already been removed in a budget cutting exercise, and those were general fund. That was part of our rationale. The other part of the rationale is we were always responsible for those accounts that were above $5 million. We always had responsibility for that. When CAFA came along, we inherited that one to $5 million accounts.
Right.
What has increased percentage-wise is those that are above $5 million. And you kind of understand why when you think that a $2 million company, as it grows, kind of moves into that $5 million category and something else fills in behind it. So you've kind of got a relatively constant number of companies that fill that $1 to $5 million slot. That was what we got the other funding for. But over time, as we get more and more, well, as inflation happens and we get more of these larger companies, there's a bigger percentage that make up that $5 million plus, which was always general funded, than what we have in that smaller bucket, that $1 to $5 million. And so right now, our funding is out of sync with what our work is as well. And so for those two reasons, we decided that general fund appropriation was the most appropriate in this case.
Would it be safe to assume that in your list of budget priorities, this would be pretty close to the top?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, yes.
Thank you.
It is literally a hole that we are holding right now, eight positions vacant, plus not spending any more S&S than we absolutely have to, including on expert witnesses and other things, in order to fill. And so it is hindering our ability to get our work done. It is
Thank
a top
you.
Priority.
All right, so really quick, Mr. Director, colleagues, we're at 50 minutes remaining, and we still need to go through quite a few items, plus allow Department of Administrative Services, plus allow for public hearings. So I'm going to ask you to
Mark
continue moving on.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm going to give it a shot here.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to move straight into the next issue we have, and that is the need for improved tools. We've demonstrated that we've had a significant decrease in staff, an increase in work, and on top of that, we've had to use a technology that at best is barely adequate. We developed this system in around 2000. It was developed in a version of Visual Basic that is no longer supported by Microsoft. It utilizes Access databases along with Excel spreadsheets, along with some manual processes to try to do the work that I just described. These enormous accounts, our largest account has 40,000 asset items in their asset list, just to give you a perspective of what we're dealing with. Because it's not a supported technology any longer, we run the risk, especially if there are changes to legislation, of not being able to make adjustments in our system sufficient to be able to address changes in legislation. I don't think there's a huge risk of it just imploding, but it is no longer supported. So it is a risk for that reason. Second, there are tools available, commercial off-the-shelf products, that all of our county partners already have that would allow us to do valuation much better. The tools that actually would enhance our appraiser's ability to get their work done and get it done more efficiently. Right now we're doing so much manual process that they're not able to get out and do actual appraisal to the level we would like. For these reasons, we are requesting to upgrade our system. It's a second policy option package that we are requesting. It would be $3.3 million over 4 years, $2.3 million for the 15-17 biennium, debt financed, really using a very similar model of what we're using for our agency CSR. In fact, you could kind of look at this as the property tax division for system replacement project. A much, much smaller scale, but just as vital to the work we are doing as the income tax program core system replacement.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. What I'm hearing is that the Department of Revenue's new IT system does not address property tax programs. Is that correct?
Chair Smith, Senator Whitsitt, that's almost entirely correct. It does nothing to help us with our valuation programs. We do have a deferral program, which I'll be talking about on the next slide. That program does integrate to some degree with the new core system replacement and will be enhanced. We hope we'll have some enhancements due to that. But that's the only part of the property tax division that is connected with the core system replacement.
So the new IT program doesn't address about between $11 and $12 million of tax collection.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, the new IT program addresses about 65% of revenue's core systems. It doesn't address 100% of them.
That's obvious.
So
perhaps I missed that somewhere along the last year or two. Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes that slide. We would we believe that a policy option package approved to provide us a system would enormously enhance our ability to get this work done, especially given the fact that we're down by almost 30% in the division. We would be able to shift resources around if we can get a system that actually allows us to do the work and do it efficiently. Okay, direct support to counties and taxpayers. So we do the valuation work and we provide direct support to the counties. I'm going to go really quick through here. Deferral administration and support. I suspect some of you at least are familiar with the challenges we've had with the deferral program. There are 6,500 current participants in the program. Over the last 4 years, the legislature has made some changes in order to ensure the ongoing viability of the program. Those changes have required us to do significantly more administrative work. The first year, the 2001 session, was the first year the changes were made. We were absolutely running breakneck to try to keep up with the changes and meet the needs of the seniors that depend on this program. 2002, 3, and 4, there was additional changes. We got increasingly better at determining what the needs were to resource this program at a level that the seniors deserve. At this point, we have determined that in order to get the answers to seniors quickly, get their answers to their questions answered, and to manage the core system replacement phase two implementation that involves the deferral program, we need to have 6 additional seasonal staff, 1 additional full-time staff. These we are proposing in our policy option package be funded out of other funds, out of the senior deferral program. We have authority to administer the program. We just need, we're seeking support from this body to make permanent limitation for additional staff to get this work done. questions on that? I'm going to move really fast through
there.
I mean, really fast. I got about, what, 5 minutes?
Yep.
Mapping services. This is just to give you a heads up. Director Buchholz talked a little bit about it. The base of the property tax system really is that map, understanding what the property looks like. We have gone from 20 FTE 12 years ago to 9. Part of that's because of changes in the counties. We used to support 14 counties, small counties, doing direct mapping support for those counties. It's only 9 now. This is in part due to the fact that the counties are collaborating better and using tools that were supported in part by the legislature. The ORMAP program developed a mechanism to help fund a statewide digital database. That is largely, it's not entirely done, but largely done. That's allowing counties to be able to work together to get the mapping work done. Counties are not collaborating between each other as opposed to having us do the work. What that's doing is freeing us up.
When you say mapping, can you help us better understand what does that mean?
Mapping is taking as Director Buchholz noted, what you get on a legal document is a legal description of the property. That legal description doesn't mean a lot to most people. And so that legal description is converted into a visual map. That visual map then becomes a base on which the assessment taxation program uses to determine what property is being taxed. And so the
that's completed for each and every property.
Every property in the state, every tax lot in the state is mapped per the legal description. And that is what's used as a base for ultimately determining what the property is that you're actually taxing.
So is the vast majority of that mapping completed and now we're just maintaining an inventory, or is there new mapping that's always going on?
Chair Smith, all of the map is in place in various forms. In some cases, still paper, but that's increasingly small. What the ORMAP program did was convert those relatively antiquated systems or paper maps into a state-of-the-art GIS system.
I understand now. Okay.
I only highlight this because I want to recognize that the counties, because of the work that the legislature did to help fund this, now have tools available where they can start collaborating together and not have to come to us for the support. We're still available when needed, but it's freeing us up to do the oversight responsibility to ensure that they're doing it consistent with statutes and rules. Assistance to counties. Director Buchholz already gave you some examples. This is an extremely complex system, the property tax system. 132 exemptions or special assessments. Personal property can be challenging. Measure 50, people have heard about Measure 50. Very complicated. As counties try to understand how to apply Measure 50 to particularly difficult cases, they come to us to get answers. Farm forest, again, lots of different things going on there. And training. We provide training in these and other things to ensure that the counties have the level of skills necessary to get the jobs done consistently. Improved alignment of resources to business needs. The majority of the cuts that I talked about 35 of those positions came out of this section. We had to really focus in on what the needs were. We worked with counties to determine that. We worked almost annually with the assessors to refine. County funding issues, won't go into this much. Those CAFA issues I talked about, that the chart where the CAFA funding was going down, that hits the counties exactly the same way it hits us. So they previously had about 30% of their funds, or up to 30% of their funds. A&T programs covered by the CAFA fund, it's down to less than 20% for most counties now. Oversight of the property tax system. Last slide. This may be, again, as I mentioned, one of the most important functions we perform. 36 counties doing this. There is an obligation on the part of the Department of Revenue to ensure that every citizen in the state is getting a similar level of quality consistent across the state. We are working with the counties to determine how we could do this in the most efficient manner possible. In the past, we were in counties a lot. That's something that we can't do as much because we just don't have the staff to do that. My second bullet, we're using better tools to measure performance. We are working with our research section to look at the data that we currently have to determine if it gives us some input as to where counties may be struggling. We then go to the counties to work with them to determine what either we could do or the changes they could make to address those issues. I can't overemphasize, we have a very collaborative relationship with the counties. We're in this together. And with that, I'm done. Any final questions? Sorry, I hit you with a lot. This was just a ton of things.
And, no, this is good for a phase one overview. This has been good. Any questions from the committee? Any comments? All right. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate this. Okay. Where do we want to go from here,
Performance
Mr. Director?
Measures?
Okay.
Let's see. How do I get this out of here?
Oh, escape.
Okay, good. Thank you, Art.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. When we talked last session, the subcommittee gave us permission to propose revisions to our performance measures. Mm-hmm. We presented to you our proposed changes in the 2014 session, and you indicated general approval with our changes, but the committee didn't take formal action. We've anticipated that you'd want to see the new measures, and so that's what we're prepared to report on here. By way of refresher, these are the old measures that we believe needed to be changed, and there's a table here that identifies the old measure and the issue that we saw with it, and so why we wanted to make those changes. This summarizes the old measures that we're retaining and our new measures, along with the outcome that we're attempting to influence. Each of these measures ties back to our mission in some meaningful way. And in the interest of time, I won't touch on each of these individually, but I'll touch on a couple that I think need some explanation or illustrate something that I want to highlight. If you have any questions about any of the others that I skip over, please stop me and ask the question, and we'll move back over to it. Average days to process personal income tax refunds, percent of personal income tax returns filed electronically. This is our employee training measure, customer service.
Chair. Yeah, Senator.
The employee training, that's quite a ways below the target.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we made a significant push for training this year. And I think what this shows is just the difficulty that we have in meeting that particular target. We want to make sure that we're giving people meaningful training, so we don't want to give them training just in order to meet the performance measure. But if you were to look at the underlying numbers, you'd see that we had several employees that had 80 hours of training, and we get one for that. And we had several employees that had 15 to 19 hours of training, and we get a zero for that. The measure is every employee getting at least 20 hours worth of training. So it just shows how difficult this is for us to do. I acknowledge that.
So I want to push pause here. I want to go back to slide number two.
Which one is slide two? Help me. Okay, there we
right
go.
Right there. Can you help me understand what it means by construction issues?
Sure. Yeah. I'll take the first one here, the dollars collected per revenue agent per month. When I came on, I had come out of the property tax program, so I hadn't paid too much attention to the measures prior, most of these measures prior to that. And I realized that for many of these, they were measuring the work of specific subsets of employees. And so for this particular one, it wasn't all of our collectors, it were certain units of collectors that were doing pedal to the metal collection. So it was trying to measure what a pure collector would do, because our collection section does a variety of different things, some of which are beyond just direct collection. So there are things to support the program rather than the actual collections. The problem that we had with this one is our collection area had made a change to the business where they separated the work of the collectors out into two different types of processes. One were on
phones only, and the other part were on working the queues, the active queues. And the active queues were the ones that really generated the dollars. The folks that were working the phones, that had to be done, obviously, but that didn't generate the dollars. So it looked like these collectors over here were going gangbusters, and these over here weren't doing well. In the particular biennium, in the 11-13 biennium, we had a record year, or a record biennium, in the direct enforcement revenues, but it looked like there was a reduction because the subset was measuring the smaller work of the phone agents rather than the actual work that the section was doing. And so in performance measure parlance, this is a shifting baseline. It's just a poor construction of a measure. And so that's why we're...
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
I wanted to talk about the customer service measure because this is, I would say, our black eye this reporting period. The measure takes survey data and it compiles the percentage of good or excellent responses that we get. We ask, how are we doing? And it takes the number of goods and excellence compared to the total number of responses. And graphs that here. You can see we took a big dip in the numbers this year. We started collecting data differently this year. We were inconsistent in the way we had collected it in the past. In the past, we only collected it at certain times because the way that we were having to collect it was most of the responses are people that call on the phone and get a question answered. And then at the end of the question time, we'd ask them, would you like to take a survey on how well we're doing? And then the agent would ask them, so how did we do? And so we thought, one, that wasn't very anonymous and probably wasn't a very valid way of doing it, obviously, because what are you going to tell the person?
You're going to insult your auditor, you bet.
Right, exactly. The other is we simply didn't take the survey when we were really busy because we were having to cycle through to make sure that we were picking up the questions of all of the taxpayers. And so we made the decision that we were going to do this year-round, and we also made the decision that what we were going to do was give a taxpayer a telephone number to call back and take it in an anonymous way. I think what we did with that was we begged the poor responses, because who's going to call back unless you've got a problem? I wouldn't, right? If I had a good experience, I'm not going to take the time to call back. I got what I needed. But if I had a lousy experience, I'm certainly going to call back. And so we got a response rate of about 0.7%, which we think is probably not statistically viable. We're not ignoring this. We've got several things that we've done. We put our folks through customer service training, and we've got several other things that we're doing to try to address this. But I think the main thing that we need to do and what we've started to work on is we're going to have to contract with somebody who's good at surveys so that we can construct something that's going to give us a statistically viable result in this.
Because I mean, this is an important measurement.
It is. In fact, it's one of our five outcome areas that we've identified that we want all areas of our business driving to. So it is important. But I think we just fell down in the way we collected the data. This is our taxpayer assistance measure, county appraisal program of equity and uniformity, appraisal value uniformity. The cost of funds, this is one that I want to touch on. This is a new measure for us, one that we proposed. This particular one is the direct enforcement dollars received cost of funds. It tracks Department of Revenue efficiency and effectiveness at generating those enforced revenues. So it's that $188 million slice that you saw in the pie. And it compares the dollars that wouldn't have come in without DOR enforcement to the direct and indirect cost related to the activities that support direct enforcement. Over time, you want this measure to trend downward, right? You want to have it for it to cost less for you to collect a dollar.
And I wanted to highlight this one because the increase in 2014 there reflects the significant investment that you folks made in us to replace our core systems. Mm-hmm. When implemented, we expect this the cost of funds to trend in the right direction. This is the collection dollars cost of funds and the cost of assessments. And this is the one I'll end on. I would say that out of all of the things that have gone right for us in the past couple of years, this is the one that I think I'm prouder of than any. This is our employee engagement measure. Employee engagement tracks several things that go to employee satisfaction in the organization. It tracks their satisfaction with tools and infrastructure to do their job. It tracks whether or not they understand the mission of the agency and their unique role in meeting the agency's mission. It tracks whether the employee feels valued by the supervisor and whether they feel supported in their career development. It tracks whether or not they feel they're getting adequate training and development opportunities. It tracks whether the employees get feedback on their performance and are held accountable, whether they feel they have a voice in the unit, whether employees have faith in the direction of leadership, and then the overall satisfaction with the organization. This is a measure that is used not just within government, but it's used nationwide with private industries as well. And the survey that is used to evaluate it is developed and run by a third party, an independent third party. And this allows us to benchmark against other organizations, including in state government. And we still, I would say, you see that we made a big jump from 53.5 to 60 over this, and we still lag behind a couple of our sister agencies, so we still have some work to do. But I'm really proud of this is you can see where we set the target numbers. And the reason those target numbers were set so low is everything that I read about employee engagement is that if you are doing everything absolutely right, you need to expect this number to slowly move up. And that's because you're changing a culture. And culture changes don't happen very quickly. And so all of the literature is that you expect this number to move very slowly. And I would say that the increase between 2013 and 2014 just exceeded my wildest expectations. We were very pleased with what we saw there. There's still work to do, but I'm encouraged.
Senator Johnson.
For the benefit of our new colleagues, I think it's important to point out that this is a pretty dramatic change. This was an agency that has struggled ferociously, and I'm going to attribute the effort and the results to Mr. Buchholz's leadership there. He wouldn't say that himself, but this is an agency that is experiencing a complete cultural shift, and you should be applauded for this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, thank you for that, although you are right. I won't take credit for that. It is really the work of ours. The biggest piece or the biggest mover for employee engagement is the relationship between the first line supervisor and the employee, right? And so if the first line supervisors weren't on board and working on this, then we wouldn't have had the movement that we had. So there's credit to go around.
And I agree with that, and I applaud the whole agency for moving in this direction. It's a good thing.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have 25 minutes left. Director, is there any last comments you want to share with us before I
Mr. Chair,
you
I think I'm
day.
Ready to turn it over to Art and to public testimony.
Perfect. All right. Mr. Any questions or comments from the committee? All right. Director, thank you. All right. Art, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Art Ayer with the Chief Financial Office in DAS, and I'm here to give you a high-level overview of the governor's budget for the Department of Revenue for the coming biennium. And I'll cue this up, and we'll get going. The agency already mentioned one of its major issues, the core systems replacement project. It's starting rollout two in this biennium. It extends over to the next biennium, and will continue with rollout three in the next biennium. The agency sits inside the improving government 10-year plan vision. The graph on the screen shows the prior biennium 2011-13 actual expenditures by general fund and other funds, the current legislatively approved budget through December of 2014, and then the governor's budget on the right-hand side.
Perfect. Senator Whitson, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. Art, maybe you can, not today, but can you give us a much better breakout of that? That's an $81 million increase in two biennia with only a 21 or 31 increase in FTE. I assume a good part of that has to do with the core system.
That is correct.
But it would really be helpful to have that broken out into how much of it was for hardware, how much of it was for planning, how much of it was for labor, because that's quite an increase. $81 million off as a percentage of 175 is a bunch.
Yeah, it is.
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Whitsett, I will provide you with some further detail on that. The increase between the current biennium and the coming biennium for general fund is $23.8 million from 166.6 to 190.4. A good portion of that is simply rolling forward existing positions and steps, step increases, and so forth. That's $14.5 million. And then policy packages add another $9.2 million, of which the core system replacement is 7.8. And I'm in the 7.8 million general fund, I am rolling in both the general fund spent on the project itself directly and then the debt service related to the bonded indebtedness to be spent on the project. The governor's budget supports all of the agency's current programs. It provides some additional staff for the Senior Disabled Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program and for 911 tax, and that was expanded to prepaid services, so a little bit additional workload there. It provides additional general fund for the industrial appraisal program that was talked about earlier. And that's actually indicated on the very bottom of that, the very last bullet there, the computer-assisted mass appraisal system under the three technology improvements, and of course also the core systems replacement project and the personal income tax refund fraud detection tools. So those are that's a high-level overview of the investments. The next slide shows some more detail, some dollar figures. So the property valuation system, which is the computer-assisted mass appraisal program, $2.3 million of other fund limitations and $0.4 million of general fund for, I believe that's debt service on the bonded indebtedness there. The CAFA, or County Assessment Function Funding Assistance, funding shortfall that was talked about earlier, the $1.8 million shift there from the other funds to general fund. The Senior and Disabled Citizens Property Tax Deferral other funds limitation, and that was talked about earlier. Additional monies coming from that program to support additional positions. The Personal Income Tax Refund Fraud Analytics and Detection, $1.1 million of general fund there. The addition of some other funds limitation to administer the expansion of the 911 emergency communications tax to prepaid phones. And the core system replacement project, which of course is the largest piece, and that is $7.8 million of general fund, again including the debt service there, and $26.6 million of other fund limitation along with the various positions. And I haven't shown the positions on this sheet, and I do have some information on that if you have questions, but I was trying to keep it brief.
Really quick.
Yes.
I'm going to direct this to the director. Can I get a Can I get a one pager on CAFA? Just some history information, executive summary type. It looks like we got it behind us. All right. It's on my system. Perfect. That's all I needed to know. Perfect. Thank you. Please continue. I'm
all
sorry.
Right. No problem. Thank you. And finally, a $2.6 million general fund unspecified cut in the governor's budget in the agency. Comparing this to the co-chair's framework, we don't have a lot of detail on the co-chair's framework, but what I can tell you is that the co-chair's framework indicates that it provides the necessary funding for income and property tax administration. It does fund the shortfall in the CAFA, the $1.8 million shortfall there, and then there is a $1.9 million general fund unspecified cut, which obviously is smaller than in the governor's budget, which where it is $2.6 million of unspecified cuts. The co-chair's framework does not include funding for rollouts 2 and 3 of the core systems replacement project, and does not include funding for the enhanced property personal income tax refund fraud detection tools. And that concludes my remarks. Be happy to take any further questions.
Perfect. Any questions? Any comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time. Okay. We're now going to move to the public part of public testimony. And Gil, do you want to come on up?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
So we have a sign-up sheet here. Is there anyone else who wants to speak? Okay, so Gil, I'm looking at the clock. Will 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes suffice?
Yes. Perfect. Mr. Chair, I appreciate it very much. For the record, Gil Riddell, Policy Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. Before I start, with your permission, Senator Johnson's comment about marijuana made me realize that this would be the first time that Oregon will grant farm a deferral for growing weeds. I submitted two documents that are there before you, and for the mental health of the veteran members, I won't go any deeper into the CAFA program, but you'll find this. It's titled A Brief History of Direct Property Tax Administration Cost Sharing. It's some 4 pages, and it takes you up to current day.
Perfect.
I'm here to request that you resume the appropriation to CAFA, a $5.2 million a biennium that was begun in 1999 and swept away in 2009. And by the way, the department's 5% of that would be $520,000, which would reduce their policy option package to $1.3 million rather than $1.8 million. We have had a significant reduction of state resources to property tax administration, and we have to wrestle with measures 5 and 50, which can be indecipherable. Yet the revenues that we collect at the county level and are shared with education and other local taxing districts are critical. the available resources that we lack mean that counties cannot go into the field as often as they would like to see what property it should be on the tax roll but is not. There could be improvements that qualify for the tax roll, and there could be new housing. We have anecdotal evidence of that very thing happening, and folks not paying their fair share for public services. This view was confirmed in November of 2004, before there were, again, additional cutbacks afterwards by the Department of Revenue study. We don't come here to beg. We are helping ourselves. Counties statewide spend $99 million a year to perform this function: appraisal, assessment, collection of property taxes for all taxing districts. We retain 17% of that we collect. Schools get 45%. So it's not as much to work with as we would like. We also have pilot projects underway. In 1999, the legislature began appropriating $5 million a biennium plus CPI through the Department of Revenue budget to CAFA, which you now know the full name. It was symbolic of supporting our work assessing and collecting local resources for schools. Schools do not participate. Other local taxing districts do participate in the funding of CAFA. Schools do not. Unfortunately, in 2009, we had the Great Recession, and the legislature decided that it needed the $5.2 million for other programs. So it was swept away into the general fund. And by the way, CAFA originally was intended to provide 35% of the total load that counties carry. It now, as you heard, provides less than 20%. And we have counties in fiscal distress. We're now in the era of fiscal distress, largely because of forest management practices and other problems. And then I refer here to the governor's policy option, governor's recommended budget, the policy option package that would be benefited by this by resuming this practice, this very helpful practice of appropriating the $5.2 million plus CPI. It ended 6 years ago. It lasted 10 years. We're asking that you resume it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anyone else that wants to share a thought? All right. John, before I close the public hearing, is there anything I need to be thinking about?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, the Government Ethics Commission has responded to the questions of the subcommittee, and they are posted under that the meeting date for that hearing. And maybe Julie, if I'm not sure, we'll get you that date for sure, since it was been a few weeks ago. And just as an advance for next week, the Public Employees Retirement System will be up for 3 days, including on Wednesday two work sessions for reports. And then on Thursday, the Board of Accountancy will be up for their first and only phase one hearing day.
Perfect. All right. Is there any questions or comments from the committee? I'd remind you that we have good information on accounts receivable collection activity, and that when we hit round two, phase two, we'll really be able to dig further into it. And so I apologize today that we didn't have as much time as we would have liked. All right, colleagues, we're going to close. Julie, are we good? All right, we're going to close down for the day, and we're going to adjourn.